Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast. I'm Bobby Sylvester, and today I'm joined by Paul Sporer of RotoGraphs. He also does the Sleeper in the Bus podcast, and it's always fun to talk to Paul because he just loves baseball so much, knows the game incredibly well, and he's on Twitter at Sporer. That's S-P-O-R-E-R. You can find me at Bobby Fantasy Pro. Paul, thanks for taking the time to talk some fantasy baseball today.
Appreciate you having me back. How you been?
I've been real well, real good. Cardinals are surging back into the playoffs, which has been a lot of fun for me. And, you know, fantasy baseball playoffs are coming up. So that's exciting. It's kind of been a little bit boring of late, you know, just waiting for the playoffs to get here. But the time is now, and we've got a little bit to talk about. It's not going to be the longest show today. We've got some news to cover, you know, 10 waiver wire guys and a couple mailbag questions. First of all, I saw another one of these stupid articles this week outlining how baseball needs to change, and they came up with a ridiculous proposal. I'm sure you saw this.
I did.
To give the winning team just two outs in an inning when they're ahead. I'm so sick of this stuff, Paul. I mean, if you don't like baseball, fine. Stop watching it, but quit trying to ruin it for the rest of us who love things how they are.
No, I'm with you there. I mean, there are steps that they need to take to improve the game and improve pace. This is not one of them. You do not fundamentally alter the out structure of the game. I'm sorry. This is not...
What a goober.
I'm not like hard and fast, no changes whatsoever guy. But to me, I just think that that's absurd. I cannot get behind it. And I respect that, you know, he put a radical idea and he's trying something, but it's a big no for me. It's just not going to happen. You're just not going to get me sold on anything that changes the outs.
Like, yeah,
that's just what the game is built on. Three outs. No.
I'm sure he had fun writing the article, and it's fun to think about these things, but man, I just really wish people would just stop saying like, man, baseball's struggling so much. We need to fix it. It's fine.
It's really not struggling as much as people suggest either. And there are things that need to be improved with the pace to keep a younger audience engaged. I understand that. And I love the game. And I watch games that I'm like, this is boring right now. The thing of it is, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't cause me to change it. But I've watched contests where I'm like, this should be moving at a more brisk pace.
Yeah.
But that is not the change to make. It's just not.
All right, Paul, well, let's talk about some of this news, and none of it's really too big, but Luis Urias called up. He's not a big-time prospect like Juan Soto or Vlad Guerrero Jr. or anything like that, but, I mean, the boy can play some baseball. I think he's ready. Is he someone you're wanting to pick up at this point?
I'm a really big fan of this guy. I saw him at the Arizona Fall League and really came away impressed in a handful of games, obviously a small sample, but just really liked a lot of what he was doing at the dish, and he absolutely cut a figure similar to... And I know this name's going to shock because of what this guy's doing this year. So I'm not talking about present day. I'm talking more about the early stage, Jose Ramirez.
Interesting.
Just down to the size that he had, and he was still able to generate some pop with it. Did get to see him hit a home run at the Fall League. And again, I'm not talking present day. Jose Ramirez, because obviously that would be crazy because of what Ramirez has been able to do. But I really do think that this is a guy, Luis Urias, who's going to come up, hit for some average. And the thing that we've been seeing so often is that when guys come up from the minors, they basically add a little bit of power because this is a better power league than most of the minor leagues, even the PCL, just because of the way the ball is bouncing and flying out of the yard. So don't be surprised if he even chips in a few homers as well. Really love his plate patience. He's got great plate control, amazing contact, and can take some walks. I really like this guy. I would try to fit him on a roster in a lot of formats the rest of the way for Luis Urias, and definitely a 2019 guy that I'm in love with.
He seems a little bit like a Ben Zobrist type to me, and obviously Ben Zobrist he was a very quality fantasy baseball player, so like you don't want to throw that in there immediately, like maybe in the future. I mean, he just turned 21 years old. I don't know if the power is really there yet. I mean, he played in El Paso, which is one of the biggest hitters parks in all of minor league baseball. He had 8 homers. He also had 30 doubles, 7 triples. I mean, the guy's hitting into the gaps now, I think, in 2 or 3 years as he matures. This could be a 25 home run guy. He's going to steal some bags, maybe 10 a season. And like you said, I think he's going to hit 290, 300 in this league. This is somebody that you want on your roster, and especially as, you know, everyone's going to the DL, the season's over, they're playing all these September guys, you're going to need to pick up an infielder. And Urias, he plays a lot of positions, so I think that he's going to be extremely useful. I wouldn't pay big fab to get him or anything, no. But you're running out of time to spend your fab, so.
Yeah, and I don't think that you have to spend big on Urias because, I mean, he plays in San Diego. People aren't going to be necessarily looking for him. And this is the time of the year where even in competitive leagues, you don't have everyone fighting for all the players.
Yep.
And so it could just be a couple of folks that are going for it. He's batted second in both of his games, playing second base. I think he has some shortstop eligibility in some formats, I believe ESPN. So he'll add that second base with it. And so he makes for an interesting guy. He should play the rest of the way. There's no reason San Diego shouldn't have him in there every single day.
And then finally, I want to talk about this Trevor Bauer story, which anything with Trevor Bauer always cracks me up. Like, some people don't like him. He's just hilarious to me.
Good
so
for
he's got the, you know, they're saying he might be out for the season. He might even be out for the playoffs. He's got a stress fracture in his leg. He'd be out there tonight if they would let him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've no doubt about it whatsoever. He's like throwing on his knees and everything to keep his arm ready. What is the actual timetable for his return? Like, should fantasy owners just cut him?
Oh, man, I think there are some folks out there who probably should because they, you know, have their DL filled with say, Gary Sanchez and Aaron Judge. And
yeah,
they
people
only
who
have
are
two
actually
DL spots,
coming back.
You know,
yeah.
and they're fighting for everything. And you know, if it's an ESPN Yahoo League, they default to three bench spots. I do think there are scenarios where you could look to cut Trevor Bauer, as crazy as that sounds. He's had an amazing ace-level season. Timetables are so sketchy as it is, even when they're said to be sound, right? When a team is confident in one, I'm not confident in it, let alone this one with so much doubt cast over it. So I am nervous here, and I do envision some scenarios where you could cut Trevor Bauer and pick up somebody. Obviously, it would depend who's available too, but if you're in a head-to-head league, especially you need all those starts or you're chasing ratios and strikeouts in a roto league.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a specific scenario and I hold out as long as I can, but push come to shove, you need that guy. Maybe you need a bat. You can do it. It might burn you, but you need to get the playing time too. So it's one of those that you're just going to have to grit your teeth and do it.
The original timetable had him back in the second half of September. And, you know, here's the thing that, the Indians are going to make the playoffs. They don't need to get Bauer back and rush him back. And, you know, maybe he's not as healthy as they would want him to be going into the playoffs. Now, they're going to want to get him some innings, but I don't think he's really going to be useful in fantasy. I loved the story of him snapping back at the media. And I guess, you know, we're kind of the media, but like this guy just flat out lied and Bauer called him out on it. I love that about Trevor.
Well,
Bauer.
And then there was a scenario with something at ESPN where he realized he was wrong and then took ownership and apologized. And so
yeah.
I did respect that from Bauer. So he went on the attack on a bunch of different things, then had seen one of the things that he was on the attack about was incorrect and came back and said, you know what? I got it wrong. And I always appreciate when people have accountability when they goof. And so I do respect that from Bauer. Like I said, I think he's good for the game. He's an eccentric personality and we need more personalities.
It's just so funny. The Diamondbacks traded him back in the day for absolutely nothing because they just didn't want him in their clubhouse. And
Didi.
So I remember at the time thinking it was absolutely nothing because Didi wasn't even a top 100 prospect.
He
really
wasn't
fine.
He was a glove only guy, not a glove first, a glove only prospect.
Yep.
And so it was like, wow, you just traded the number 3 overall prospect for this. And I remember Cleveland also got, or no, they sent Shin-Soo Choo to the Reds. So the Reds ended up, they were the ones that sent Didi down to Arizona. So it was like, you know, the Reds got a huge bat in Chu. The Cleveland Indians got a huge arm in Bauer. And then you had Didi there. Obviously, Didi's since emerged. And that's actually turned into Robbie Ray. So in a way, it hasn't been all that bad. I know Robbie Ray is not pitching to the caliber of Bauer. And I'm going to rank Bauer higher next year. But it not all was lost. They salvaged it with that second deal.
Yeah. All right, Paul, let's talk about the waivers, and it is ugly. We still need to talk about it, though, because some people need to pick people up. Melky Cabrera is playing kind of out of his mind right now.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we know who Melky is, but, I mean, do you believe in these hot streaks? Like, do you pick up players while they're hot, or is it just kind of what you think the talent level is?
You know, I think you have to. You got to play the ebbs and flows, and especially in shallower leagues. You know, I'm not going to cut my struggling established guys for them. So that's where the tough part comes. But you should have 2-3 roster spots at any given time that you can churn, unless your team is just locked and loaded, in which case you're in a good spot. But for the most part, I don't think most people really have that. And so you have these mixed league spots that you can churn and start to play hot hands and kind of move on from them. And sometimes they're going to click and you're just going to go ahead and hang on anyway. So yeah, I do think you could play a hot hand like this. As far as Melky specifically, he's now been rolling pretty well since I think middle of July out through the entire month here with five homers. He's not some power guy though, so I feel like you've probably missed the bulk of it. There are probably other guys on this list that we're going to get to that I would rather play the hot hand on, but yes, I'm very open to it in mixed leagues. I used to be a little bit more reluctant. These days, I'm more open to it in mixed leagues because I think it's a winning strategy.
It's not like he was so bad last year either. I mean, he had 78 runs, 85 ribbies, 17 homers. The batting average wasn't really there, but you know, that's about as good as you're going to get on the waiver wires at this point.
He's just always solid, if unspectacular, Melky Cabrera is. He's what I like to call a glue guy. You just put him in and he gets his numbers by the end of the year. Now, this year he's only played 50 games because of injuries, so it hasn't been there. But the 3 years before that, 150 plus games of just solid production.
I can't believe the Indians didn't go out and pick up some big outfield bat. I mean, they must really think surprised. There's no chance they're going to beat the Astros, Red Sox, Yankees, because they didn't do anything.
No, I mean, they got Leonis Martin, who then unfortunately was felled by a serious infection that, you know, really, really has threatened him. And thankfully, it's getting better, but a bacterial infection was attacking his organs. And that was obviously very scary.
Yeah, it was actually life-threatening.
Yeah, and, you know, interestingly enough, I'd mentioned it on a podcast, and it was called intestinal turmoil or something interesting like that, and I kind of made not light of that he was hurt, but just the phrasing of it on RotoWire. And then someone mentioned it to me on Twitter, like, oh, I heard you say this thing about how it was written up, that was funny when you talked about intestinal turmoil. Then his wife reached out to us and said it's actually a lot bigger deal than that. And we were like, whoa, you know, we weren't trying to make light of it. You know, that's crazy. And then she had actually told us before it came out in the media, just on Twitter. It wasn't like some scoop or anything, but she's like, no, he's getting better, but it is definitely serious. And if only it were just intestinal turmoil, but it was a much, much bigger deal. To your point, though, and not to take away from the seriousness of that, Leonis Martin wouldn't have been that big bat that you're talking about anyway.
Yeah.
He really would have just been somebody who, you know, plays great defense, has an average bat, which would be an improvement, though, because the next guy we're going to talk about just hasn't been making the grade until very recently for the Cleveland Indians in Greg Allen.
Yeah, Greg Allen is stealing bases, which is funny because last year he stole like one and he has seven in the past month. What do you make of him? Like, is he someone we can actually rely on, or did it just, you know, it happened for a blip in 2 weeks and now he's just kind of done?
You know, it's another guy I saw in the Arizona Fall League and actually really came away impressed with. And I've been kind of waiting for him to do something at the big league level. And you point out how he only stole one base last year in the majors. It was only 39 plate appearances, but I was hoping to get some cheap steals out of Greg Allen. This year, you've gotten those steals, but at what cost? It's really only AL only viable at most because he's been so bad on the slash line, 244, 280, 319. However, he's turned it around a bit lately. He is riding high with a big BABIP, and that speed certainly helps that BABIP. And so I do think there's a little bit of viability here. If you need steals, even in mixers, I think you take a shot here and try to get those steals and just hope that he hits at least a 270 clip where he's not actively hurting you on the batting average piece.
So we've got all these guys around the major leagues who were like blocked by the Astros or blocked by the Cubs because they just have so many good players. So the Cubs ended up letting Billy McKinney go. He's another one of these guys, and he's getting a chance now with Toronto, and he looks pretty good. I mean, I'm not sure he's like some world beater or anything like that, but you know, he's hitting for some pop. Yeah, he's batting 351. That's going to come down, of course. But what do you think about Billy McKinney? Would you rather have him than someone like Greg Allen or even Melky Cabrera?
I got to say on this one, a little bit of a cop-out, but I just think it's the truth. It's 100% category dependent. Do I need some punch or do I need that speed? And if it's punch, I'll lean toward McKinney. And if it's the speed, I'll go ahead and take Greg Allen. But I have been impressed with what McKinney's been doing. He has been riding a little bit hot lately as well. And I'm eager to see if he can kind of keep it up at some semblance of this clip. Obviously not this exact level, I wouldn't believe. But we're talking again about a team that has no reason not to play a young guy like this that they picked up. And so he's been kind of installed in left field there. And I think he's going to continue to play with regularity, as he should. And I think we'll see some punch. And again, hopefully kind of keep that 270-ish, because I don't think he's going to maintain anything near a 351 clip. It's been 364 with the Jays. But I think he'll give you some punch. And, you know, hopefully batting in that lineup every day, give you a little bit of counting categories and some batting average, like I said, in the 270s.
Yeah. Now, the next guy is someone that I'm even less excited about. The other guys, yeah, they're fine. You can pick them up. I'm not encouraging anyone to pick up Dansby Swanson. Yeah. The reason I want to talk about him, though, is because a lot of people are rushing to pick him up. He's finally hot. He's a big name, you know, former top pick and everything like that. But you look at his season, his entire career, and it just screams Gordon Beckham to me. And a lot of people don't probably remember that name, but there's a reason why. He was just, he was this great prospect. Everyone expected him to be awesome, and he came up, and he didn't hit, and they thought he eventually would, and he never did.
Well, didn't Beckham have an initial flourish right away just like Dansby Swanson? I think like his first little stint was decent for Beckham, if I recall correctly, just as we've saw as we've seen for Swanson back in 2016. That's a really interesting name, and you know his defense keeps him out on the field, and I generally like guys like that because they get kind of that on-the-job training, and maybe he becomes a Brandon Crawford type down the line. But we're talking about only a 24-year-old right now who's still kind of a below-average bat. You know, you got the 13 homers, the 6 steals, 247 average. If you have that as like your middle in an NL only, there's some viability, but that's a pretty specific format.
Exactly.
I'm with you that I'm not really running out to get him. You know, he's got a twin there on the club, Charlie Culberson.
They that's look right. Exactly that is alike. So funny.
I tell you what, though, if Culberson's defense could match Swanson's, I feel like he'd have the full-time job. But Swanson is so good defensively that it is worth keeping him in. Like, I get why Atlanta keeps playing him, but if I'm a fantasy person looking for somebody in that middle infield spot, I'm not going for Swanson. I don't see it yet. I need to see more improvement, and it's not been there yet.
You know, for the first, 7 years of his career, Elvis Andrus did absolutely nothing offensively. His highest OPS was 727. He stuck around, you know, and he eventually hit 20 homers, stole 25 bases, batted 297 last year. So he was the top fantasy shortstop. This kind of thing could happen to Swanson eventually. I mean, that's like his ceiling, of course, but, you know, these things do happen. You're right.
At least with Andrus, he had the speed component too, so you could play him, and he was a guy who was locked in every day, so you could get some speed there. With Swanson, I just don't see it. And so that's why, you know, again, I like these types. I keep an eye on them because they play defense every day. They get that on the job training. They could improve. But I agree with you. It would take something like an Andrus, like a Brandon Crawford emergence, maybe in his mid to late 20s, and he's only 24, Dansby Swanson. So right now, it's a no for me.
Yeah, you don't want to rely on that. And I looked up Gordon Beckham, by the way, while you were talking. As a 22-year-old rookie, he had an 808 OPS. He hit for some power, had some speed. Everyone was excited about him.
There you go.
And then under 700 OPS every single season for the rest of his career, a 10-year career, and then he kept playing him.
A defensive stud. Because he was allowed to bounce around. Now, I think Swanson's glove is better, but that's why he stuck around. People kept trying to give him a chance and say, well, he can play some defense. And then, he got to play a lot, Gordon Beckham did, and not really put up numbers. So that's a stunningly sharp comp that is probably going to annoy a lot of Braves fans.
I wish they would have done that with Brandon Wood and Dallas McPherson. Do you remember them?
Yes,
those two, like, super prospects. It was like... What did they call Rice and Fred Lynn for the Red Sox, the Gold Dust Twins or something like that?
Oh,
we thought these guys, Brandon Wood and McPherson, were going to be the best combo ever, like Lindor and Jose Ramirez today, and both of them just totally flamed out.
Because their power was just over the top, and they did play infield positions. And when you get guys on the infield that can hit for that kind of pop, and it's not at first base, you get really excited, and it just never clicked for either of them. And, you know, they get brought up with regularity whenever people are talking about, you know, not getting too hyped on prospects. Brandon Wood, man, he did literally nothing as a major leaguer. 751 plate appearances with a 40 OPS plus. He was 60% worse than average.
I forgot just how good he was. In 2005, in one season in the minor leagues, he hit 57 homers, 57 doubles, 5 triples. I mean, he had 119 extra base hits, 148 RBIs, batted 318, and this guy busted. So funny, man.
That's crazy. I mean... That is absolutely wild. He was a 20-year-old when he did that too. So of course you're going to have excitement for a guy like that. And he would continue to hit well in AAA too. And it just never clicked. I mean, kind of a classic quad A guy where he probably deserved a league higher than AAA, but not as high as the majors. And it just didn't exist. He was a tweener.
Wow, same season. Dallas McPherson. He had 40 homers, 36 doubles, 14 triples. So this guy had 90 extra base hits, 126 wow. ribbies, 12 steals, 317 batting average. Man, these two guys were like Vlad Jr. and Ronald Acuna, and they both just sucked.
That is insane.
All right, next guy here, and sorry to take us off on a tangent there. Actually, let's go two power hitters here. Tyler White, he's performing really well. Luke Voit finally got another job, and he's doing the trick. Do you like either of these guys long term?
You know, I like Tyler White, especially. I think he's a really quality hitter. I actually wrote him up in a piece recently talking about some unsung guys who've been surging over the last month. And I highlighted Tyler White, and then he hit a walk-off about an hour afterwards. So I was like, oh, yeah, that's sweet. I like when you write a little something about a guy and he goes out and does something big. I think he's got a real power profile, though. Even as he comes down and kind of smooths out on what he's doing, I think the power profile here, he walks a ton, doesn't strike out a ton, keeps the ball in the air. I think we're still going to see some pop even as he kind of comes back to the pack.
Yeah, I like Tyler White quite a bit. I've been waiting for him to get his chance, and you just figured it was never going to happen. He was going to be one of these guys like Billy McKinney, who, you know, had to go to a different team to get his chance, and everyone forgets about him, like Candelario in Detroit, who didn't end up that good. But I think Tyler White, he's not a special player, but I think he can be someone like Greg Bird, who excels at the major league level and, you know, maybe gets an all-star appearance at one point in his career.
Yeah, I definitely think we could see that. And, you know, it's not like, keep in mind, Yuli Gurriel is kind of new on the landscape, but he's not some young buck. He's I think, a 33-year-old, and they like to mix and match. And Houston is not afraid to play the guy who's performing the most. And it's not that Gurriel's been bad, but he's been pretty average. And so I think getting Tyler White in there with consistency is the right play, and he's been eating up all of the opportunity. You know, he's been killing it with his opportunity. So I really like White.
I don't really like Luke Voit. I mean, it's nice when a guy's hidden like that, but he just kind of reminds me of Matt Adams. Now, Voit's a righty, of course, but just one of these guys that's going to pop up, have a good month or two, and just kind of be less than average.
It's hard not to at least give a little head nod to anybody that plays in Yankee Stadium. Again, even though he is a righty, it's still a good park to be in no matter what. And he does have some punch. You invoking the name of Matt Adams, I think that rings true there, right down to the fact that he was a Cardinal who got called up in his mid-20s. And their favorite thing to do is bring up a mid-20s guy who is like just a quality hitter. And so I could see some viability there, but I still think they love Greg Bird anyway. And so they still want that to work, and they should continue to try it out. I know that I'm on the case of saying calm down the Bird hype because he hasn't done anything to deserve it, but I understand that the skills are still there, and I think Voit's a nice fill-in for them, but nothing crazy.
Yeah, I mean, if you need a warm body, he's going to do the trick. He'll get you some runs and RBIs in that lineup. He'll hit a home run here or there. Batting average isn't going to kill you, but I think there's more exciting players, especially Tyler White. That would be my, of the guys we mentioned, my number one pickup. Now let's talk some pitchers here. Lucas Giolito. I didn't think I'd be saying this name on the podcast maybe ever again. Hey, former top overall pitching prospect, and he just lost it. But he seems to be really good not really good. He's not an ace quite yet, but over the past five games, he's showing enough life that I've actually picked him up.
I have a thing. First off, I didn't make up the phrase, but I've acronymed it. It's PGIL, prospect growth isn't linear. And you just have to remember that with prospects.
I like it.
They are not just going to stair step up perfectly into their stardom. Sometimes it looks like an EKG and it's just bouncing up and down. And obviously with him, with Giolito, we didn't even really get the up. In fact, it was like straight down. His first sample with the Nationals in 16 was awful. And then even the one last year where the results were good, 2.38 ERA, 0.95 whip, wasn't backed by anything skills-wise.
You're right.
So that wasn't even really a jump. And then this year was awful. And so the point is that he had all the prospect hype. He's really struggled to learn at the major league level, but I love that he's going to get a full season under his belt and take his beatings and also find some success at the end here. And hopefully he can continue it through September, because I think that's just a great kind of in-season transformation, and he's finally missing some bats. I think his pitches are starting to work a bit, and you look at what they're doing with that rotation. They called up Kopech. They've got Giolito. Reynaldo Lopez has his flashes as well. He's also a prospect growth isn't linear type of guy, and Carlos Rodon's had great success, not with the strikeouts, but with contact management. They're starting to put together a rotation. They've got a lot of young talent coming up from the minors as well to go with Tim Anderson. Hopefully Yoan Moncada gets going. They could be ahead of schedule next year. They really could.
Kind of like the Phillies this year.
Yep, and, Phillies the Indians, and Braves.
Yeah, I mean, the Indians have a lot of talent. I'm not saying they're going to come up and knock them off next year, but it wouldn't surprise me if they leapt ahead of them. And I think it's inevitable eventually.
Yes, it is inevitable, and it wouldn't surprise me if they knocked around for most of the season, then kind of tailed out the way Milwaukee did last year.
Yeah.
And then Milwaukee, so it's almost an NBA thing. You see this in the NBA with a team like now the 76ers, right? They got their taste. They got in. They got pushed out of the playoffs pretty quickly. Let's see if they get back in this year, make it a step further. It is kind of the stair step thing in the NBA where you see the team kind of make it and build up every year. Baseball, it can kind of happen quickly, but I do think sometimes you see these young teams rise up a year early and then don't quite make it through the 6 month grind. And then let's see what they do the follow up year. The Brewers have done well. And they're holding strong. By the way, the Braves and Phillies were looking like they could be one of those teams this year. They're both holding strong because the Nationals have pushed back. So they've kind of bucked the trend of doing that. I do think the White Sox could do that last year or next year, because I don't think the Indians are unbeatable, as you mentioned.
I also think they're a big enough market team that they could go out and sign a Bryce Harper or Manny Machado if they can convince them, hey, we're going to win in 2 years. If you come now, we can win next year. They've got enough money, kind of like the Brewers did getting Christian Yelich and Kane. I mean, those two have been awesome.
I fully agree. And you know, this team's going to turn around quicker than we think, because I think they were a laughingstock to start the year, especially with those young guys getting their butts kicked so regularly. And now you're seeing with the rotation coalescing a little bit. The one thing, and this is always kind of the last piece for a young team, is the bullpen. But you build those on the fly, right? And when you have as much talent as they do in the minors, a lot of the starting pitching talent isn't going to work out. That's where your bullpen comes from, though. We were starting to think that maybe Giolito was going to be part of that, but now it's exactly like he's going to be part of the actual rotation. So they're a really intriguing team. I think he is a pickup at this point, Lucas Giolito, because he's just been doing too well. And pair that with the fact that the starting pitching landscape has been so ugly that you just don't have a lot of options.
I mean, he's not going to throw 97, 99 like he did as a prospect. He's, you know, sitting at 92, but he's got good movement. There was actually an article on your site on Fangraphs by Jeff Sullivan breaking down his arm slot and how much more movement he was getting on his pitches as a result. And he just looks so much better. I think he can be one of these solid number threes, maybe even a number two eventually. Never that ace, but worth picking up. I like Danny Duffy a little bit more, though. What do you think about Duffy?
I would agree with that. He's a more established guy, Duffy is. And, you know, we've seen the ebbs and flows in his season. I mean, he was toting a 5 ERA as late as July, I believe, early July. Don't correct me if I'm wrong on that. But, you know, it's been a rough season for him. But it's been that type of season that I almost like. If you're going to struggle, I like it like this only because it's been elite outings and then duds. I don't want to see a guy just meander his way through the season, a bunch of 5 innings, 4 runs, garbage, right? He's been awesome, and then he gets his butt beat. And it's just like, well, you can erase some of those bad. Because a lot of times when you get shellacked like that, it's one bad inning. And if you can get through that and figure that out, he was still throwing 6 innings, giving up 6 runs, 6 innings, 7 runs, 5 2/3, 7 runs. A lot of that is one bad inning. And you can kind of find the fixes for that. In fact, we're even seeing it during this run for Duffy. He's got a 3.86 ERA in his last 9, and that's with 3 outings of 6+ earned runs, which tells you how great he's been in the other 6. So I like Duffy more as well. I like both, though, because that division, obviously they can't play their own team, neither of which is a great offense, but they do get to play each other. That Minnesota offense doesn't really scare me. My beloved Tigers aren't very good. And even Cleveland doesn't inherently terrify me if a pitcher's pitching well.
Agree. Yeah. I mean, usually we do these waiver wire sections and it's like we get through the hitters and it's like, man, there's 3 or 4 guys I wouldn't mind picking up. And then we get to the pitchers and it's like, well, this guy's a streamer. This guy's a streamer. Don't pick up any of these guys. It's a bunch of Rockies pitchers who are pitching well lately.
Right.
And here we are. We've got 2 guys, Giolito and Duffy. I want both of them. And I agree with Duffy. I like the way that his season is going, because you know what you're going to get based on how he's been pitching lately. And he's one of these guys that he's had some off the field issues, and you know, as long as he stays on the field, as long as he stays healthy, he's somebody that I'm going to be targeting late in drafts next year. And I'll tell you what, he's won me probably more money than anybody else in baseball in DFS this year, because you use him every once in a while and he's just the man.
And that's what I was talking about with the volatility there. You almost love that for like a GPP setup, because the nights that he does go off, you got him for dirt cheap.
Yep.
And yeah, you're going to take your beatings on certain nights, and that, okay, that entry's done because he gave you like a -6 and it's hard to rebound from that. But you keep playing a guy like that, especially on like a DraftKings where it's your second starter. He also gives you some flexibility to get an ace. So I agree. I like Duffy and Giolito here.
The next guy we need to talk about is David Hess. I have really nothing to say about him. I think that he is just a streamer who's been pitching all right lately, and I don't know if it's going to really last.
100% correct, and a lot of September games are in division, and I don't know exactly how Baltimore's schedule lines up off the top of my head, but if that's the case for them as well, then it's a full no-go, because that means Red Sox, Yankees, surging Rays, and a mediocre Jays team that I would rather not mess with somebody that I just don't have a lot of confidence in with David Hess.
Yep, no thanks. I would say, I mean, you write that article about you know, your pitcher rankings, and I like the way you set it up where you always use this pitcher. You know, you use this pitcher like 80% of the time and so forth. I would say David Hess, you use him like in 15% of his starts. So,
yes.
Yeah, you can stream him once or twice a month.
Spot starter in deeper leagues, you know, maybe on a weekend Hail Mary situation, you're really trying to get something going, but not somebody that I'm making a big case for right now.
Now, the final pitcher we need to talk about, and frankly, we could talk about, I don't know, maybe 8 closers right now, because people stopped paying attention to fantasy baseball, apparently, because all these guys are available. But Chase Fry is available in 95.4% of leagues, and not only is he getting saves, he is dominant.
He has been absolutely tremendous, and this is a big part of some of their little success that we're talking about with the White Sox. He might be one of the pieces of this bullpen should they take a leap forward next year. You just look over the last month, and he's got 11 2/3 innings, and you're like, oh, you know, I'd like to see maybe 15-16 strikeouts. That'd be a nice rate. How about 23?
How about with three walks,
only 3 runs, only 2 of them earned, 7 hits. I mean, you're not kidding. This guy's absolutely dominating. 3 saves, 4 holds. If you're in save holds, like every time out, he's doing something for you. He even mixed in a win, and he can go multiple innings. I love the way they're using him. He's a really interesting lefty. Jace Fry, definitely someone I'm scooping. They're not going to win a ton of games, but actually, you know what? I'm not even going to say that they're going to be awful down the stretch, because we just got done bragging about their rotation. If they're staying in games, the wins that they are going to get are going to be close, and Fry's going to notch saves and holds for sure.
Especially if they call up Jimenez. They'll start winning some games. I'd put them at like 480, 500 the rest of the season.
Right? I totally agree. And by the way, side note, did you hear that his lawyers might be looking to file a grievance?
Good for them. This stuff, right. I mean, the rules are written in a way where teams are not encouraged to call up their players, but like,
I don't blame the team. I blame the system.
Yeah, exactly. I blame the system. We got it. That's got to change somehow, because this is garbage that these best players are not getting called up because they're trying to save a dime.
You go back to what we opened the show on about changing the game and whatnot. Getting the best players up and not having to worry and see that teams are incentivized to leave them down is a much bigger deal than chopping off outs if you're leading in a game.
Yeah.
Because that will generate excitement. That will make the game inherently better. Eloy Jimenez, Vlad Jr., they should not be down. It's absurd. And yet, I do not blame the White Sox or the Jays. They're being as smart as the system suggests that they should. I mean, it's the quote unquote right move by them. At the same time, I completely understand Eloy Jimenez's agents suggesting that maybe they're going to file a grievance here, because this is absurd. Look what he's doing in AAA. You can't tell me. This is supposed to be meritocracy, right? Sports is supposed to be the biggest meritocracy there is. You beast out, you are rewarded handsomely.
Yep.
What more could this kid do to get called up? They're taking money out of his pocket.
It's just like Chris Bryant back in the day with the Cubs, and that turned out to be the right thing. They're going to get Bryant for cheaper for longer.
Exactly.
And it just sucks. I don't know what the solution is, but there's got to be some solution.
There has to be, too, but it's coming to a head as well, because now the veterans might care, because they usually kind of cast off the minor leaguers aside because they're not in the union. But now they might care because look how free agency is going. Teams are wisening up to not spending bunch of money on 30-somethings when they know a young buck could come up and replicate and perhaps pass him for pennies on the dollar. And so they got to get a balance there to where the minor leaguers start making more money if these older guys want to kind of stay in the league and stay relevant, or else they're going to get pushed out and it is just going to go to a bunch of young guys waiting till that last minute to bring them up. It's going to come to a head soon, and the union hired a big time lawyer. I forget his name, but a lot of people on Twitter that I follow were saying that this is a big deal and could lead to a strike if they don't come to an agreement. Like, they're going to make some big moves here. This has to change, and I don't want to see a strike, but I do want to see the players union buckle down and get some changes done.
100% agree. And you know, these things suck. I wish they would change about baseball, but you look at the problems in the other sports. In NBA, you've got half the teams not even trying. They're trying to
not
lose.
Not even half.
And in football, you've got people whose brains are like melting.
Yep.
This is nothing. Baseball has exactly. The least
on the grand scheme, you're definitely right there, because I agree. And unfortunately, though, we've had this year has been a little bit NBA-ish, but I also think it's kind of a perfect storm where we're seeing a lot of teams tank. It's not going to be, I don't think this is going to be in perpetuity. I think we're just happy to see a perfect storm of a bunch of teams tanking. And obviously those rebuilds will start to pay dividends. And I think the league will kind of meet in the middle a little bit more too. So I don't want things like the NBA though, where there's only like three teams that can compete. I remember like one year recently, within like the last 3-4 years, where the preseason NBA show, they were geeked out of their mind because they believed 5 teams could win the title.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Like they were freaking out because we got 5 teams in contention. I was just like, wow.
I can't watch it until the playoffs because who cares? Can't. It's just like college football. Like, there's 4 important games all season. That's it.
I watch the Christmas games. I keep an eye on it. But yeah, I'm with you there.
All right. Let's move on over to the mailbag. And these ones should be kind of quick hitters. There wasn't much to reach from. mailbag@fantasypros.com if you want to send in a question. Keep it short and simple. Let us know your first name, where you're from. And this first one's from Brian in Minnesota. He says, Jose Ramirez might go for 45 homers and 35 steals. Is there someone I can acquire in a keeper league who could take a similar leap forward next year? I think the answer is no, but like, who's the closest thing?
The closest thing, I mean, he's already been doing well. It's probably somebody like a Bregman. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. The guys that could, I think, are kind of already doing well. I think the speed component is the toughest part, because there's a guy that I still absolutely love who is having a good season, but I just don't know that he's really going to chase down even 25 steals, let alone 30, and that'd be Xander Bogaerts. I still absolutely love everything about this guy's game. He's still remarkably young. I think he's super talented, and so he's somebody I like. Another one would also be a little bit obvious, and if you look, his season has kind of waned after a big flurry, and that would be Ozzie Albies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I love Ozzie Albies. I was pumping him up big time, and I still feel like it's a win the season that he's had. But if you look kind of since, I think, like mid-May on, he's been pretty pedestrian, like a high 700s with some decent counting numbers, but not as electric as he was to start. He could definitely do something like that. He's only got 12 stolen bases, but he's got the speed to do it. So Bogaerts and Albies are the closest thing I could think. And here's the thing, too. Speed is a choice often. Stolen bases are a choice often. You do not have to have blazing speed to get them. You have to have the team that allows you to do it and the desire to do it as well. And that usually means staying clear of nagging injuries, because once those pop up, you're less likely to go ahead and try to take those opportunities. So I don't even rule out that a Bogaerts could drop 25 or so.
Agree.
If he wanted to. And then I'll give one more. I was looking for middle infielders. I'll go with an outfielder who I've loved for a long time. And that's Aaron Hicks. And now he's a little bit older. But I do believe that he could do like a 35-20 sort of season. I think he's a fantastic player. He's struggled with health throughout his career. Switch hitter in Yankee Stadium, though, I still really love Aaron Hicks.
You know, you bring up the point. I just want to piggyback on about anybody can steal bases. Paul O'Neill used to get 15 to 20 every season. He was not fast.
Chase Utley.
Yeah, Chase Utley. A couple years ago, Albert Pujols and Yadi Molina led the Cardinals with 15 steals each. Like, those are the two slowest guys ever.
Yep. I mean, it's because if you're smart, you can steal bases. You have to put in the effort and the desire. You can nab bases. I can't remember who it was. It was a player of of note, I remember, was said to a beat writer or a Ken Rosenthal type, anyone in the league could steal 15 if they just tried,
yeah,
and just put in the effort. And I agree with that. And I think the cases that you mentioned prove that. So that's why I don't even rule out somebody like a Bogarts in just a mad, you know, just a wild season. All of a sudden he steals 30 and we're like, whoa, he just went 30-30, something like that.
Kind of like Manny Machado to this year. He's at 13 right now. He's probably going to get to 16, 17 just because he wanted to.
Yep, exactly. And remember when he stole a bunch, Machado did a few years ago, and then had zero the next year. That's a great just 1-2 punch right there of how it can go from he had the desire and want to do it to, plus they don't run a lot. So he went from 20 to zero and then to 9 and then this year 13. So yeah, there are a lot of guys who could do it, but those are the three names: Bogarts, Albies, and Hicks that I would focus on. Bregman, like I said, but that's high dollar. You're not really going to be able to go out and buy him at anything that isn't going to decimate your team right now.
I've got two other names, and I kind of took this a different way, like not so much going for the power speed combo, but going for the guy who's going to be drafted in the third, fourth round who could become an MVP candidate. And it's two young shortstops. One of them is Carlos Correa, who, you know, he hasn't really done too much in his career. He's had some stints. Last year, you know, he was hurt. He had a 941 OPS. I think that this could be a guy who hits 320 in a season with 35 homers, 110 RBIs. And then Corey Seager, we've seen him be right in the heat of the MVP conversation before. I mean, let's not forget how young this kid is. He's just going to be 25 years old next season, and he's got tons of power. He's got a bat. He's not going to steal any bags, but this is somebody who I think could win an MVP and likely will win an MVP at some point in his career.
Both great calls for sure. I'm never giving up on Carlos Correa. I shouldn't say never, but I'm nowhere near giving up on Carlos Correa. And Corey Seager, somebody who, you know, had a year off to get healthy, eager to see what he can do coming back healthy. I'm going to give you one long shot, by the way, of somebody that I absolutely adore.
Okay.
And he's been on fire lately. Adalberto Mondesi.
Oh, yes.
He's got brilliant speed. So if we're talking, you know, you're talking about, we were talking about some early rounders or Jose Ramirez, 45, 35. It's nothing like that, but it's more of like 20, 40. I think he could, in a full breakout season, he's got enough pop to really push 20 something, and his speed could even, honestly, he could be a 20-50 in a breakout season. Adalberto Mondesi for the Royals. Absolutely love him. And he doesn't cost anywhere near any of the guys we mentioned.
Yep.
Because Hicks is probably a cut below the other guys we mentioned, but then Mondesi is like five cuts below that. He's not going to be expensive. So there's your flyer one.
I like that one a lot. And here's the thing, if you spread out his 170 plate appearances to 600, we're looking at somebody who stole 58 bases this year with 20 home runs. So you're exactly right. And he's batting 267. That's going to come up too because he's just 22 years old. I love that call. I'm definitely going to be drafting him next year. I'm begging everyone else to. And it's kind of funny. I remember him when he came up. He was Raul Mondesi Jr. And
yes.
I guess he just didn't want to be known as, you know, Raul's kid. So he changed it to Adalberto.
Are you also familiar with what dad has been into?
Oh, I seem to remember reading something, but I don't remember what it is.
Yeah, I believe he's in prison for some improprieties as a government official. I think maybe a mayor, perhaps. And so I'm not saying that that's why he changed it, but not only to get out of dad's shadow baseball-wise, but maybe to get out of dad's shadow on the Google results.
Yeah, wow.
You know, when that stuff comes up. Yeah, pretty bad.
Defrauded he was a mayor, you're right. He defrauded his city for $6 million.
Dude. Didn't he play like 20 years? Like,
he probably made $100 million.
I'm looking at it now on BREF. 65 mil. You really needed six more?
That
I mean,
is
and
absurd.
Then you got Esteban Loaiza trying to become freaking, what's his name? Walter White from Breaking Bad with cocaine. He's in prison as well. And
Ugath Urbina? Didn't he kill someone with a machete?
Yeah. Now that's like, that's next level. These guys are obviously.
I should not laugh.
Doing horrible things, stealing money and being drug runners and all that. But this dude, I mean, what Ugin Turbina was accused of, holy Toledo. So yeah, some bad stuff there. But that might be why Mondesi wanted to say, you know what? Let me just drop the Raul and just go Alberto Mondesi here.
All right, two more questions. This one is just a this guy or this guy for keeper. And I usually don't put these on the show, but this one was really interesting to me because Edwin Diaz has a 60 save pace. Blake Snell's ERA could be under 2 at some point.
Bananas.
If you had to pick one of them to keep, it's Snell for me. Is that who you go with?
has to. And it's basically a slam dunk for me too. And it's less about anything for Diaz and more just about Snell and the lack of bona fide aces out there.
Top 30 and pick. I'm not picking any reliever in the top 50. So
exactly. Now, I will say this. He's no longer a prospect in the true form of you know, being on prospect lists now is, but he's going to be 26. I don't think he's 100% fully formed either, though. So he could kind of peel back a little bit, be more of like a mid threes next year, but with a boatload of strikeouts, that would not be a failure. But do not plan that this is like 100% his level. Just understand that it could level off a little bit. But with Diaz, nah, I don't keep closers like that. If I can avoid it, I'm definitely going Snell.
You know, I wish that they would just let Snell loose and let him throw 220 innings. Yes. I want to see if he can strike out 300 guys someday. Agreed. But he's on the Rays, so he's going to end with like 160 this year, even though he's been healthy all year.
Yeah, they're going to protect him for sure.
He's got 16 wins. I don't really care about wins, but 16 with the Rays, man. It's impressive.
It really is. Yeah. And I don't either. I mean, I care about them in that I need them in leagues. I don't chase them or make value judgments off of them. I don't chase them in the draft, but in season, you have to start chasing them at some point if you're behind. And he's done a great job winning out there with the Rays, and they've got a good bullpen. So when he does turn over a lead to them, they get Blake Snell that win.
I can't believe they didn't let him in the All-Star game. What a stupid
thing. The fact that he had to be like the replacement, I knew he'd eventually get there because there's always so many replacements, but the fact that he wasn't locked and loaded, that was terrible.
Maybe that's why he's pitching so well, is just to say, well, screw you guys.
Exactly. That's on the players and coaches, right? Fans don't control the pitcher one, and that's really bad on their part.
All right, final question, and this one is from Travis in West Virginia. He wants to know if we can trust guys. This is a great question. He wants to know if we can trust guys like Luis Severino or Justin Verlander in the fantasy playoffs, because they've just been horrible.
I know that you know, JV's had a little couple bumps lately too. If you really look at it though, it's like a 4-star run of a 7 ERA. It's too bad, too good. And so I don't really get hung up on that. He did allow 3 homers in each of the 2 bad ones, and that is something to acknowledge. And homers have always been an issue. Whenever Verlander's in trouble, it's homers. It's because he challenges guys though too. He doesn't give in, and that's how he keeps the walk rate low. If he gets a 3-1 count to some scrub with 2 outs, or even not a scrub, even a good player, but with 2 outs, he's going to challenge that guy. And if he goes solo yak on him and makes the score 5-2 instead of 5-1, okay, on to the next one. That same challenge mentality though can burn him, you know, in the heat of a battle too, when it's, you know, he's facing Matt Olson or whoever. I know the A's hit a bunch of homers off of him, and all of a sudden they're piling up some runs. But the bottom line is, yes, you have to, because who else are you going to trust?
Streamer, but I would rather play Justin Verlander and pick my odds. And Severino's been pitching well lately, so I don't know if he was the best example, but like, you know, like someone like Lance McCullers, you know, he was going to be the Cy Young of the American League last year until he was just awful. If he's in that awful stretch, someone like McCullers, I'm not playing him. Like Tyler Skaggs took a big step backwards when he was awesome. Like if Jack Flaherty started pitching terrible, I wouldn't use him. Verlander, sign me up. I'll use him.
That's a great point. You talk about a Flaherty, a Walker Buehler, as great as they've been. If they really hit the skids and looked gassed, then I'd be looking to move elsewhere. But Verlander, I could not live with myself if I got too cute, benched a Verlander or Seve, and they went and just dropped 8 scoreless in my playoffs for like 50 points if it's a head-to-head. Yep. I would just, I'd never live it down. And so that, no, it's not, it's a non-starter for me.
Yep. All right, Paul, that's all for today's show. As always, that was a lot of fun, and thank you for taking the time to come on.
Happy to be on. Thank you so much for having me.
It's our pleasure. And for those of you listening at home, we do have another show coming up next week. We're doing like 5 podcasts for fantasy football right now, the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Check that out on iTunes if you haven't already. I host it with Mike Tagliere. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and enjoy your baseball.